once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English, Dan.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
I often toy with the idea of just remaining silent when you wait for my name. See how long we can go. And then coming in slowly with a Jake.
That would be an interesting thing to do, because it would probably throw off the entire next 2 hours.
The entire episode would be blown as we're trying to figure out how to talk to each other.
Well, it's important that we tell you our disclosures, disclaimers, and disclaimers and retainers and whatever. The Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of this radio program, it's also the name of an SEC-registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, that does wealth management. Which is neither approved nor disapproved by the SEC. We say SEC registered, meaning just to let you know who our regulator is.
Yeah.
Because we're supposed to for some reason. We advertise on this radio station for the show, but we don't get paid to do this show, nor do we pay KTEM to do the show. So this is not an infomercial.
Right. But there is info in it, just no mercial.
Right, right.
This is an infomercial.
The information we present on this radio presentation program or whatever it is we're doing is informational only.
As educational.
Educational information. It is not investment advice. And you should, for investment advice, you need to take into account your personal needs and your objectives and your goals and your risk tolerance and a whole bunch of other stuff.
It's really hard to do that when you're talking to as many people as we are at the moment. There are a lot of you listening right now.
How do you know there's a lot of people listening?
It's pure faith. It could be that it's just you and I and I'm not listening. So
I think it's just you and I using microphones and headsets to talk to each other, which means we're really geeky.
Yeah, it's great. I'm going to text you in just a second. We'll have a text communication while we're talking through these microphones each other's earphones.
Information that we present on this program has been obtained from sources we deem, this is only one chance to use deem to be reliable and accurate. However, we make no warranty or guarantee as to the completeness or accuracy of the information we present on this program.
No warranties, guarantees, or any other kind of teas. We are more coffee drinkers.
How about Earl Grey teas? Earl Grey
teas. No warranty, guarantee, Earl Grey tea, all coffee around
but
here.
But we can make some coffees.
Yes. We can.
So we do, as a matter of fact. I've had several cups already this morning.
Can you tell?
Yes. And the telephone number in here, do you know what the telephone number in here is?
I'm looking. Yes, it is 254-771-2463.
See, I got it right on the newsletter. Cool. 771-2463. I knew what it was. You want to hang on to it?
You knew what it was?
Yeah.
Then why did you? You were just trying to give me a test on
the
air.
I gave you a test on the air, and you passed it. So that's really cool. So, if you call 773-1400, which is the old number you could call, you will discover this line is no longer in service. Why?
Wait a minute. The phone company has to hire you. That recording is far more annoying and that annoying phone message is annoying. But they're obviously striving for the most annoying. And what you just did was perfect. Can you do that again?
Dee dee dee. This number is no longer in service. Now, what they leave off on then. Why is it no longer in service? We don't know.
Nobody knows.
Somebody knows somewhere, but.
Got shut off by someone.
And, all right, so, what happened this week? By the way, this is January. What is today? The 11th? No.
It is the 18th.
It's the 18th. Shows how much I know.
Yeah, it is the 18th.
It's January 18th, 2020, which is still very, very difficult for me to say.
And in 2 days, it'll be 1-20-2020.
I think I should just take the day off. Some kind of holiday, isn't it? Yeah, it's a holiday. It's Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
We just take the day off.
I'm taking the day
off.
So I don't
write 1-20-2020.
1-20-2020. We're out of here, folks.
So, the stock market did an interesting thing this week. Denny, say anything else?
Well, what did it do? I thought it was it went just up nearly there. Did the people in the market do things to it?
Apparently they did, because the stock market, meaning the S&P 500 stock index, rose almost 2% in 5 days. It closed out at 33.29.6.62. That has been, it literally broke a new all-time record every day. And reading the Wall Street Journal, there were no headlines. Stock market breaks all-time record.
Because nothing
it's
like
just,
that. Yeah.
Just doing it every day. It closed out the week at an all-time record. But that was a little headline in the Wall Street Journal buried on the markets page.
Yeah. Impeachment kind of is important, I would say.
I don't know.
At least in the minds of the news media. For us economics folks, are the geeks out here, yep, that are much more impressed with the numbers than the politics.
But it's not
we really we have to get the shovels out and dig into the news to find the stuff we're looking for.
It's the interesting thing is, here's the market roaring upward in the fourth quarter, and it's accelerating into this first quarter. Following a year in which earnings in the S&P 500 actually declined, this is one of those things that, as far as logic is concerned, makes me scratch my head. Which, since I don't have any hair on top of my head,
leaves little red scratch marks.
Yeah.
We've been going around the office with scratch marks on our heads.
I kind of suspect that, well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which we don't normally report on, is about to do something interesting for us humans. It busted when it went through 29,000, by the way.
There wasn't even a headline.
There was no headline.
The first time it did it, a couple of weeks back, it was just a quick headline. Oh, this is a big deal.
It was intraday. But when it closed above 29,000, it's no big thing.
Nothing.
Now, there'll be some headlines when it closes above 30,000.
They weren't lacking for headlines. That's the thing. But 29,000, while it's a round number, 30,000 has a lot more O's in it. It's much rounder. So that's going to get a lot of headlines. Why? Because it's an arbitrary number, but it looks pretty.
It does.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
It is a measurement of growth. Why is the one with lots of zeros more impressive than a whole bunch of nines right before it? Because we're humans, and for some reason we like to look at round numbers.
Which tells you how long I've been doing this. I really clearly remember the Dow rising through 1,000. That made big headlines.
Yeah.
Now it's about to rise through 30,000, which is probably going to happen in the near future. Why do I think it's going to happen in the near future? Not because of any wonderful economic news that's going to come out. Not because of any big jump in earnings. I think we're going to see some disappointing earnings reports for the fourth quarter as they've been coming out. Some of them have been coming out very good. Some of them have been coming out not so good. Some of them have been coming out terrible. But I don't think we're going to see overall in the S&P 500, super earnings for the fourth quarter. What we are seeing is momentum, as they call it, and perhaps the early stages of irrational exuberance at this point.
I still have the Wall Street Journal from sometime in 1991 when I first started working with you, and it was past. It was a headline: Dow Jones Industrial Average passes 3,000.
Yep, that was impressive. I remember 2,000.
Uh huh. Which wasn't that incredibly long before 3,000.
Yeah, but 2,000 was a big number because it had doubled from 1,000 when I started. I thought, wow, that's cool. This is the point. In Barron's last week, the headline was that their panel of experts had met, and there's some really expert experts. The biggest names in stock picking and in the bigger economists, well-known commercial economists for the brokerage firms, people who've made accurate long-term market calls in the past, they got them all together, and their consensus was there's virtually no chance of a recession in 2020.
Which immediately causes me to disagree. Not
yes.
based on any facts, by the way. Just based on human nature. When you get a bunch of experts together to give non-data-based opinions, they're almost always wrong. And there's study after study after study that shows that. So I don't even know what their rationale. You've read this story. I haven't read this story. But I don't even know what their rationale is, and I don't need to. It's a red flag for me that we may be up sooner than we expect one.
Well, it's
you usually don't get recessions when you expect them.
Whatever it is, it's going to cause a recession this year, and I don't know. I can't tell you the future, but I can say that I still expect a major correction this year, maybe a recession. I think it'll be relatively mild because we do have one bubble out there, and it's a serious one. And I don't know what would cause it to jump away.
Which bubble are you talking about? Because I think we might
have the bond market.
Well, the bond market, yes.
And the reason I say that is,
but there are offshoots of that lead into insurance, that lead into other areas that are directly connected to the insurance.
It's like the real estate bond market bubble collapsing by itself would have not have been a problem. It's just that so many things had come to rely on ever rising real estate prices that it did cause a problem. I was looking at a portfolio of bonds this week, and they were trading at like 107, 106. 105. In other words, all the bonds in the portfolio, with the exception of two, that where the source of the money was drying up, were all trading well above their maturity value. And they were municipal bonds. And municipal bonds are generally ultra boring, but these weren't ultra boring. These were ultra exciting because they were trading. You know, when you're buying a bond that's trading at 107. You have a maturity date that's only 10 years or so out. You're going to lose 7% per year, but you're going to lose 7% between now and the maturity date. And I don't think people are prepared for that. I don't think people have got, as a matter of fact, the other thing is cash flows this year. The vast majority of new money coming into the market flowed into bond funds this year.
Yeah. That's always scary.
Retail money coming into the market.
Let's explain why that's scary. Why is that a thing? When we're talking about a whole panel of experts agreeing on something being a scary sign, or the majority of money flowing into a given location, if you go back through history and watch the big money flows, what you'll find is that most people are putting money into areas that have just been up. They're not predictive. Money flows are a lagging indicator, and they talk about where people believe things are safe or believe things have the ability to grow. If that was right all the time, we'd never have a down market. So when we watch the money flows, it's just important watching the outflows as the inflows. When a lot of people are pulling money out of the stock market or out of the bond market, it's generally a good sign for the health of that market. I know that seems counterintuitive, but it means that you've got better prices to purchase when a lot of people are selling.
And there's more than just simple behavior. When a lot of money is going into a given asset class, by definition, the price of that asset class goes up.
Yes.
Simple supply and demand.
That is one of the most basic tenets here, and it happens. It's real.
And so the bond market has become overpriced. And the panelists, by the way, were kind of poo-pooing that, saying, no, but also the bond market's a little overpriced.
I
remember when they were saying that about the housing market and mortgage bonds were a little overpriced.
Right.
And that's basically somewhere will become something that happens unexpectedly, and it will cause the house of cards to fall apart. When I say house of cards.
All of our houses are built of cards, by the way, just as a side note. There's always something that can cause it to yours not. You're right. Yours is
built of trees.
Dominoes or something. Wait. I thought we were only building houses with game pieces.
Oh, well, I build a house of trees.
Oh, you play different games.
Yes. Old trees. Old used trees. But the point is that when a lot of money flows into the market and we see the stock market continuing to rise dramatically, it was up 25% from a year ago, and earnings were down.
That's another big scary sign for us.
Earnings are actually negative for the year.
But the market's up 25.
The bet that the market, and I've looked at all the forecasts for earnings for the S&P 500, and they have some rise in earnings forecast in for the first three quarters, but the main rise in earnings that everybody, that people seem to be betting on, is in the fourth quarter of the year, of this year, of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
All I got to say is if that doesn't happen, all those assumptions suddenly go out the window.
Why are we saying this? We're not saying this to tell everybody to run to cash. And after hearing us say that we're smelling recession on the wind and experts are disagreeing on back and forth, the reason why we're saying this, it's like talking about this. Anybody that's listened to this program for very long knows our view on recessions. It's weather. It's like weather when you're sailing. It's important to know not to sail into a hurricane. But this storm that we're looking at growing in the future sometime is not going to be a hurricane, or at least doesn't look like it. The last one we had, we just see, I mean, 2007, we definitely sailed right through a hurricane. It wasn't fun. And come forward to today, being aware that weather is a real thing, that storms actually occur, and we've been more than a decade now without any major storms. So people on the open seas are kind of feeling relaxed, and hey, those don't happen anymore. Weather still happens, and this weather is just happens to be human created. The economy is a human created thing. There's no great mastermind behind it. It's a bunch of people making decisions based on their impulses and long-term planning. So coming through knowing that your impulses are going to be tested in bad weather, in recessions, just gives you some time right now to make some adamant decisions on why you are invested where you are. Make sure it's for good reasons, not just that it's gone up a lot recently. Make sure you understand why you've chosen what you've chosen. And defining that for yourself, it's as important to define it when the market is really up as it is when the market is really down. But when it's really up, you get to make the decisions. All right, I bought these things because they were really underpriced. Are they still underpriced? And if not, you may want to start changing where you're investing, moving around a little bit. That's more active. If you're in a mutual fund that's doing that for you, just be aware you might get some bigger capital gains bills this year inside of your mutual funds. It's kind of for 2019, because they were selling their winners internally at the same time that the amateurs were buying. The managers of these mutual funds were selling their winners, which obviously somebody's buying them if they're selling them. And we see the inflows and the outflows. We know it's more likely the amateurs buying them than the professionals.
We got another parallel going on right now in the market, in the stock market, to 1999 and 2000.
Right.
In early 2000, we broke all records for the quantity of money in index funds.
Yeah.
We just did it again. Actually, yep. in the mutual fund world, there is now more money in index funds than there are in managed funds.
It's called passive versus active management, and there's more money in passive management right now than there is in active management, which happens at big, big bull markets.
And the big chunk of that is in the S&P 500. And the S&P 500 now has 18% of its value concentrated in five stocks.
Wait a minute. There's 500 of them, and one-fifth of that 500 is concentrated in five. That's a lot of fives.
1% of the S&P 500 companies has 20% of the total value of the S&P 500. Has this happened before? Yeah.
Yep.
It happened in 1999 going into 2000. The top 50 companies in the S&P 500 are driving the S&P 500 upward.
It's the 60s again. The 1960s, if anybody was around back then, and I wasn't, I just read a lot about
it. I was definitely around in the 60s.
The Nifty 50.
Yep.
Is what they called it.
And these are indications that we're at the tail end of a bull market. Now,
the tail end could be pretty long.
And
we're just letting you know that bull markets do eventually end.
A paraphrase of what this panel that Barron's put together said was, in essence, this could go on forever.
Yeah, that's a dangerous statement.
What I haven't seen is Money Magazine or Barron's with a bull on the cover yet.
Right. That is one of those statements that is like, for the people that know to look for it, it is the clarion call. It is Gabriel blowing his bugle. That's the end of the bull. When everyone pronounces, yes, this is a bull, with no doubt in their minds, that's when the bull dies.
And by the way, the assumption is across the board among every analyst that I've read this last week, is that we will have very low inflation and very low interest rates forever. Now, this is where it comes out.
You know what the assumption was in 2009? That the market was not going to rise forever and that we were going to have runaway inflation in the near future. That's when all the buy gold ads were out there.
Yep.
So at the bottom, when there was only up to go, looking backwards, so hindsight being 2020, we can look back and see at the bottom of this economic cycle, at the bottom of the market downturn, the consensus across the published world in those that were the gurus and reading the tea leaves out in public was that there was at best a 1 to 2% growth in the market for the foreseeable future, and at worst it could be really, really, really negative going forward forever. And we were saying that's not how we see it in history then. So now we've got the reverse of that, where and is very similar to what you saw in 2006. You go back that far, you see that we had the reverse of it there too. Hey, this is great. Everybody's happy. We're done with recessions. We're done with bad news. But that's not the case.
The other thing that's going, there's several things going on. You know, inflation, we assume, was running at 1.5, 1.25 for years. And that's what we consider low inflation. And it was really wonderful, except the Treasury Department released its announcement. Yes, not the Treasury Department. The Bureau of Labor Statistics released its analysis yesterday. The Bureau of Labor Statistics is one of our favorite organizations in the United States government.
They are honest to goodness bureaucrats. It says it in their name.
And they said that for the 12 months ending December, inflation, the consumer price index in the United States was up 2.3%. And immediately I say, yeah, but what if you take out the volatile areas of food and fuel? It's still up 2.3%.
Mm.
So
what that means to me is that inflation is back.
Inflation has close to doubled in about 2 years. And yet the assumption is that it won't go any higher. Now, if it does go higher, this is where things would get interesting, and you can watch this. I don't know that it's going to happen. Then interest rates will go up. Interest rates going up would cause all those bonds that are trading at 107 and 105 and, in other words,
well above their normal, their par, their starting and ending price is 100.
Right. And if we see a spike in interest rates, we'll also see a collapse in bond value. So if people want to sell them, they'll be worth less than they paid for them, which could trigger a panic in the bond market.
Those are never pleasant. Stock panics are not fun, but bond panics, that's what led to the Great Recession. Is a bond panic. It just had to do with collateralized mortgage obligations.
Now, I'll throw one other thing in there that I don't think is sustainable. The Treasury Department officially announced this week that its deficit for the calendar year of 2019 exceeded $1 trillion.
Which is not a surprise. It's just confirmation. Calendar year. Now, we already said that for the fiscal year.
Yeah, it wasn't $1 trillion for the fiscal year. It was just under $1 trillion for the fiscal
year. For the calendar year, it was definitely $1 trillion.
And it's rising nicely. As a matter of fact, just the deficit, not the total debt, equals 4.7% of our gross domestic product.
So just the debt that we're acquiring this
one
year.
4.7% of GDP.
So if you think about that as a household, if you're taking on, if you make $100,000 a year and you're taking on $5,000 a year of new debt, you're not paying it off, and the debt is growing faster than your income, that's the scenario we're talking about.
That is not sustainable. Now, what will be done about it? There is the big question. A raise in taxes would lower earnings. A raise in interest rates, if interest rates continue to go up, now this is where things would get interesting, because the cost of the national debt would suddenly balloon if interest rates go up.
Why is it everybody talks about balloons as if they're bad? I like balloons.
All depends on where the balloon is and what it's doing.
When people talk about debt ballooning, it's not a good thing, I guess.
Well, it means it grows really, really quickly.
Yeah, let's use a less...
mushrooming.
It's mushrooming. Yeah, I like mushrooms though, too. It's inflating a tire. Well, kind of like
Well, that's
tires.
Not bad.
I need them inflated.
Yeah, but you get too much air in the tire and it blows up.
It inflated too fast. Here the balloon, it ballooned.
Yeah.
But it isn't a pretty color. It's like a puce or something. There. I don't like puce balloons. There
so I go. Guess what we're doing is being professional pessimists.
Yeah. Well, and we make our living being the opposite of what we see the consensus of the rest of the world being. This is something Lynn Woolley pestered us about this back in 2009, called, "You guys are perpetual optimists. I don't know why you think that the market's got any upward movement." Perpetual optimists in the down, perpetual pessimists in the up. I think it's a good place to be.
I think what he expected us to be is pessimists while a Democrat was in the White House,
right,
and optimists when a Republican's in the White House.
That's why I was talking about the shovel earlier. When we are looking at the news, it's kind of like this is not a perfect analogy, but say you go in for a checkup. We're the doctor in this particular case, and you're the economy. And as the doctor, we're saying, and how's your growth rate? What's your weight been around? How's your temperature been? And you can't stop talking about your new car or the car accident you were just in or the ticket that you don't believe that you earned. So we're busy going around testing your blood pressure as you're maybe a little bit angry about the ticket. We're saying, well, the blood pressure readings are a little bit weird here. Okay, he's angry. So let's kind of factor that in. Is he still healthy? Yeah, I think so. But it's hard to tell. High blood pressure might go with him being angry about the ticket. Can you calm down, sir? Too busy talking about the ticket.
Well, let's talk about a little good news.
Yeah, so that's where we are. And there's some good news in this checkup.
The Senate passed the USMCA.
Yeah.
I finally got to where I can say that smoothly instead of saying NAFTA. That's the replacement for NAFTA. It went to the president's desk for signature. I don't know that he actually signed it this week, but he said he would. And...
That's really good news. And anybody that's listened to our program knows that we've read it. We've read the other thing, and it's not a big change. So why is this really big news?
It's big news because the president kept threatening to withdraw us from NAFTA if the Congress didn't pass the USMCA. Well, now they've passed the USMCA, so there's a big threat off the table. I think that's part of why the market – there were so many threats out there, a threat of a much greater trade war with China.
Phase one signed. Nice. Or about to be signed.
A threat of us pulling out of NAFTA, which would – all those things would be really bad for the economy. And I think it's a rebound is what we're seeing in the market. And I also think it's a little unrealistic. So we're not saying market time. We're not saying get out of the market.
We are not. We're saying set your sails for heavy winds. That's really what we're saying is that expect it to be bumpy. Know why you are where you are and stay on course if it's a good course. If it's a bad course, now's a really good time to correct it. You will make no problems. You should be in good gains making the corrections right now. Change what you're doing based on what you expect the future to be. And that doesn't mean getting out of the market. That's how people lose a lot of money, is they don't get back in at the right time. So long term, keeping a steady course, but knowing the reason why the course is set is more important than the course. If you know your reasons and you believe the course will get you there, be really well diversified. Don't have it all in the market either. And there it is. Have your savings on hand. Pay off your debt while you can right now, because incomes are definitely up. Income's up higher than inflation. The last number I saw was what? December? Was that the 3.9% reading on year over year pay increase?
It's down to 3.7 now, but still it's pretty good. Now, but there's a lot of peculiarity.
3.7 is a lot more than 2.3.
There's a lot of peculiarity in that in the pay scales. And the fact that we're looking at such a large number of people in the United States is hiding something. One of the reasons that the pay scales, at least hypothesized, I've been reading, one of the reasons the pay scales have not gone, have do not appear to be rising very fast, income doesn't appear to be rising very fast, is older people are retiring en masse.
Yeah. And as they retire, their income, which is when you're near retirement, it's generally the top of your life cycle
right.
income.
And the baby boomers are affecting the statistics pretty strongly as they move out of the system.
So new hires are coming in at a lower wage than the retirees that are going out of the work system.
The point that the inflation is only 2.3% and wages are up 3-point-something percent and probably up higher in many cases. At the low end of the scale, we know they're up like 5%.
Yeah.
This will tend to push inflation. Now, why have we not had inflation so far? The most probable reason is because we have a globalized economy. Because we have a globalized economy, people can't afford to raise prices because somebody in China or India will make something cheaper and replace it.
Right. But they've just had a big expense added to their business as mm-hmm. well, so prices are coming up.
But it's key to note that imports have fallen off dramatically in the last year.
Yeah. And for obvious reasons.
With the tariffs. But the point is...
So have exports.
But this is an important point. The prices of imported goods did not fall off.
Correct.
So, in other words, we haven't had either a rise or fall, a significant rise or fall in imported goods prices. So, if the
we
prices,
just have fewer of them.
If the price actually the prices went down a little bit, which offset the tariffs, which means that there's no real reason for the imports to start to dry up, except people are buying less stuff.
Yeah.
And yet we see evidence that people are still buying as much. And so, what's happening? They're buying it out of inventory. We were talking earlier this year about the fact that inventories had been built up at the retail level and at the wholesale level across
right.
the board. And as the inventories were built up because people were trying to buy things from overseas before the tariffs hit. So now they're selling out of inventory.
And the discounts are pretty steep discounts.
And this is something else that happens at the top of an economic cycle. Now, how long the top of the economic cycle goes, that's a question. But we've kind of plateaued, and that is a very interesting thing. As a matter of fact, the consensus among the experts on the Barron's panel was that growth would not be as good in 2020. It would just kind of plateau along. So I didn't hear anybody say a permanent plateau of prosperity.
Right.
But
this coming week, Index of Leading Economic Indicator report comes out for last month.
I'm looking for that.
It was flat in November. It was down the preceding 3 months. Those aren't good signs for growth. It could be we see that reverse if the trade deal finalizes properly. We've got good NAFTA all finalized. There may be
USMCA. NAFTA is now dead.
Yes, USMCA. The North American agreement is no longer the North American Free Trade Agreement. It is now the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement.
Which I'm glad went back into effect.
This is pet peeves. So we've already said it that we've got a pet peeve about USMCA's name. The Secure Act, which was designed by Democrats, which is the acronym has absolutely nothing to do with the words it's representing. They just wanted to be able to use the Secure Act. And
was it designed by Democrats? It passed bipartisan.
It was bipartisan passing, but the Democrats introduced it. Hmm. So, I mean, that's just a lawmakers in general, whether it's the president or they're just really not good at naming things. It could have been called the Trump Agreement.
That would be nice.
He's good at putting his name on things. So, but the USMCA exists. That's good news. The Phase 1 China trade agreement, that's good news. Has the damage been done already?
One of the things that's not so good news that sounds like I'm sure a lot of people enjoyed it. China's gross domestic product is growing at the slowest rate in almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And
there are whole sections of its economy in the construction area that are this is a big announcement, laying off people in China. Why is that a big announcement? Why is that? I mean, people get laid off. Not in China. In China, it's a big deal when layoffs occur, because usually the government's involved and is saying there's another job over here. In fact, during the Great Recession, if you'll remember this, if you recall, in order to help keep their people from being laid off, the government made a bunch of empty cities. They created cities that had no people in them to keep people employed. Now there's people moving into those cities, but not very quickly, because the population of China's shrinking, not growing. So when people get laid off and the population is shrinking, it's a much bigger impact than people getting laid off with a population growing.
By the way, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and if you'd like to call in here and join in this discussion, the telephone number is 254-771-2463. That's 254-771-2463, and I think we probably need to break for some commercials.
We do. I was about to say that. So right. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, and he just gave the number. I'll do it too, 254-771-2463, and we'll be back.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. You didn't do it.
I didn't wait.
Yeah.
I should have. I could have, but I decided not to.
I think if you waited, I would say your name.
Yeah, you would have said, Jake!
That would make sense.
We have a caller on 771-2463. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Caller?
Yeah.
Yep.
Caller, go ahead.
Hello?
Oh, nobody there.
So we do not have a caller on 771-2463.
But we could, if you called in.
Yeah. Let's see, what else is going on out there? Well, we have, we mentioned the $1 trillion deficit, which, by the way, the projection is, because there's lots of projections, it depends on interest rates, because the higher the interest rates go, the more the debt costs us and the more deficit we're going to pile up. But there's some numbers associated with that were kind of interesting. We had a 5% increase in 2019. We had actually a 5% increase in revenue to the government. Yay!
Woohoo!
But we had a 7.5% increase in spending, which is why we wound up with a bigger deficit. That's where our $1 trillion deficit is coming from. And something's got to give there, because somewhere down the road, this becomes absolutely unsustainable. Because we do intend to pay off a lot of the U.S. debt is short term. It's 90-day T-bills. It goes out to about 10 years. But mostly it's at the short end, and just a few years. Which makes it very interest rate sensitive, because if interest rates rise, then the amount of money that we have to pay in interest every time one of these things matures jumps. And so the deficit bet that we're making at the federal level, and the whole idea behind modern monetary theory that says you can borrow as much as you want, is that interest rates will remain low forever. And any time that there's a bet that anything economic will remain the way it is forever, historically, every one of those bets has been wrong. And this is something that I think we're probably the lone voice in the wilderness at this point, crying that there is some things that need to be addressed while times are good. But that's not when we address things. And we have a caller coming in on 254-771-2463. So caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys, enjoy the show. We're all familiar with ghost cities in China. I saw on the Wall Street this week that there's ghost condos and apartments in India as well, 450,000, according to the article. Is this a global phenomenon, or is that something unique to China and India? I'll hang on and talk to you guys.
It's not a global phenomenon. It's a phenomenon where the country has a lot more money then they have stability.
Yeah.
And when you don't want a recession, you don't want a lot of people out of work because you've got a tremendous number of people who would overthrow the government in some form or fashion, than we. And by the way, is it a worldwide phenomena? Let me tell you what, it's going on in the United States right now.
Yeah, I'm going to put in a differentiator. That was a fun word. China is a centralized government. India is not. It's democratic, and yes, it has a federal government, and yes, they do currency sorts of things. The question to be asking here is who owns the property? And in China, it's the government that's actually instituted these ghost cities, where in India, it's private builders. In the United States, if you think back to savings and loan, or all the way forward up to the big failure of the real estate market in 2007, people had 11 houses as their primary residence. So you've got ghost cities. They're just not in. They're not concentrated in a city. They're spread all over the place, and they're generally in a non-centralized government situation. Really bad news. This piece is interesting. The Resolution Trust Corporation was put together by Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush to solve the savings and loan fiasco. The Congress at the time was involved. It was a bipartisan effort. And it bought up all of these empty, bad properties that the savings and loans were carrying as zombies. As soon as they did that, the government was able to hold it separately from the other assets long enough for the market to recover. And over time, sell those assets back to the market. And this is part of the reason why we had the surplus in the year 2000 when Bill Clinton was president. If you look at revenue from the Resolution Trust Corporation, the government was receiving tens of billions of extra dollars from profit taking from the Resolution Trust Corporation. So when a centralized government does it, it can be a good thing if they have patience.
We are doing something very similar. We're just not doing it with real estate. We're doing it with the Defense Department.
Yeah.
The deficit spending that we're doing right now, and the president said this very, very clearly when the bill passed, this is about jobs. It's about keeping full employment. It's about maintaining votes, if you will. He's very concerned, as the Republicans are very concerned, we get a recession. If we get a recession, they would lose their seats in Congress and they might lose the presidency.
That's how George H.W. Bush lost to Bill Clinton.
So that's how it's happening in the United States, is there's a lot of workers at Defense Department, subcontractors and contractors all across the United States that wouldn't have jobs except for the fact that we're spending money that we don't have. Well, the Chinese spent money they basically pulled out of their reserves to build empty cities.
It's part of the reason why they are not the number one holders of U.S. debt anymore. That's Japan, outside holders. The number one holder of U.S. debt is the United States.
In India, a lot of these empty condos that are all over the country are not going to cause anybody to go bankrupt because the loans were guaranteed by the government. Modi's government guaranteed them. Again, this is one of those things that happens in democracies when you have the ability to borrow, or you have the ability, you have a lot of money, and you don't want people to be out of work because you want to get reelected. We do this from time to time, just as we did with the savings and loan crisis, just as we did with the housing crisis.
The Japanese have done it with a whole series of their major corporations. They've had zombie corporations for decades. So there's two edges to this sword. It can be used to shore up an economy and prevent a major collapse. But when you're ready for growth, it gets in the way. What the Resolution Trust Corporation did, the bailout of General Motors did, was allow some time for the market to digest the losses rather than presenting them all at once. And in that process, it caused the losses to disappear because the market digested them and then grew a demand for them again. So
but isn't the difference, excuse me for interrupting.
Yeah, go ahead.
I guess China, the way I understand it, the government funded all and built all these ghost cities.
Right.
In India, this article said that these 450,000 condos that aren't finished yet, people had to pay down payments to get them started.
Right.
And they're still waiting for them to be finished. And I guess in the U.S. with the Resolution Trust, most of that, for a lot of that, was like speculation. So there's three different reasons.
Right. The demand issue is another factor here, and that's what, if the demand is speculation, first you have to figure out how you know that. Because on the loan applications in Florida in 2006, they all were marked, this is not speculation, this is my personal residence.
Right.
So that was part of the problem that caused the recession, was not being able to tell what was speculation and what was demand based on actual use. There's always going to be a gray area there. And when, well, for instance, this, let me just kind of come at this from a different direction. It is a very different situation in India than here or in China. That particular build-out project has a lot to do with internal fraud in the building of these structures. They don't exist yet. The down payment was given. The people are waiting for the things to be finished. That's a different structural issue. It's contract enforcement stuff rather than speculation of this is going to be an empty building, but somebody will come and buy it from me. They may have had that speculation in there as the reason why they're buying the building to begin with, but now you've got the fraud on top of it. So it's a different structural problem. What's going on in China, those ghost cities are filling up because they're demolishing other cities to do things like build lakes. And it's very strange. They're remapping the geographic locations of most of the small villages of China. They're just basically saying these are grass and mud houses. We're going to knock them down, and you're going to go live in this beautiful concrete structure. You're going to go live in a concrete box instead of this mud box. And they see it as an upgrade. It is an upgrade. So, I mean, and that's a long-term plan on their part. They just did all the building at the same time.
Reading that article in India, you know, these people, I guess, did their down payment and committed their life savings, and all they got was some nice, neat little colored brochure. But
right,
not the first time people have been screwed out of real estate.
I have clients that still own property in the Nevada desert because that was going to be the next Las Vegas. They have the brochures somewhere, I'm sure, but expensive brochures.
Okay, guys, enjoy the show. Is this going to be the permanent number, or are we going to go back to 1,400?
We don't know. We are in charge around here.
We're not in the loop. We ask, and the people that we ask are also not in the loop. So at some point, we will find the loop, and then maybe we'll be in it, or maybe we'll choose not to be.
All right, enjoy the show. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call.
All right. We're coming up on the end of the hour. It's not immediate, but we can do some wrap up of what we talked about this hour. We'll have another hour. Next hour is another hour. It's amazing. And we'll be able to talk more then. Do you have anything to say to wrap this up?
There's an announcement that I think is important.
Oh, let's make the announcement.
Alphabet has become $1 trillion stock.
Yep.
Now, I think that's very important because Sesame Street was promoting Alphabet for years.
Yes. I enjoy their soup. They have a tremendous soup, this company, Alphabet.
And they're Google's parent, by the way. And they're now $5 trillion companies.
Yes. $5 trillion companies.
And those $5 trillion companies comprise almost one-fifth of the value of the entire S&P 500. But I think it's really fascinating that we've got $5 trillion companies. These landmarks by themselves really don't mean anything theoretically, but in fact they do.
Right.
When you start breaking records like that, that indicates we're at the tail end of a bull market.
Particularly when you consider which companies they are. Every time we get to the top of a bull market, it's because at the beginning of that bull market, there was some type of new technology which was the new growth.
Let me throw one other thing.
Once they reach saturation and full maturity, once they've been valued at a point where it's really hard to grow faster than that, grow bigger than that without developing completely new things to sell, that's the end of the bull market.
Tesla.
Yep.
Which is still trying to make a profit.
It's profitable sometimes.
But not year over year.
Right.
is now more valuable. Its stock is now more valuable than that of General Motors or Ford.
Yep.
It's more valuable than the highest General Motors ever was, which was in, guess what?
1999. I'm a fan of Tesla, but I wouldn't recommend buying the stock. We don't recommend buying stocks. I'm a fan of Tesla because I think it's innovative, it's new technology, and they're trying to solve a problem in a completely new way. I like that.
I like Tesla, and I like a lot of things they're doing. But when you look at the number of cars they produce and the amount of profit they don't make, and you look at General Motors or Ford and the amount of profit they do make and the amount of cars they produce, you just have to scratch your head and say, why would Tesla be worth more than General Motors or Ford?
It's speculative. And it may be that at some point they're making more profit than General Motors or Ford, and that's what people are betting on right now. But we're about out of time for this hour.
And you have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, the first hour. We'll have another hour coming up. And if you'd like to contact us off the air, we haven't changed our telephone number. It's 254-947-1111.
And you can reach that number toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Voicemail's waiting on the weekends. We have real live people answering during the week. If you'd like to send us a message, talk to us off the air, is the phone number. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to the webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. We've got recordings of prior radio programs up there. We've got newsletters going back. You can sign up for the newsletter there. And you can read our philosophy. Until next hour, this is...